It's the one that came with the eating DVD.
Yeah.
Or that had the eating DVD with it.
Right.
Given my eating DVD away. And now I don't have it, so I want to get another one.
Who just arrived? I heard.
Morning, all.
I heard the word. Steve?
Good morning.
Hi, Mary Lou.
Has arrived.
Hi, Mary Lou.
Hi.
Good morning.
Are you making it okay?
I am.
Good.
I'm enjoying it. It's a little chilly in the mornings here.
Oh, how neat.
Yeah, well, it is, because it's getting to be pretty warm.
Anyway,
I was reading. Are you having a heat wave in Texas?
Yeah, it's going to be this week, all this week.
Yeah.
100 plus.
Yeah.
To be in the upper 90s, so I guess lucky it's not worse.
Summer's coming.
Summer's here.
Just about here, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a butternut squash, and I had those Bartlett pears, and so I made that butternut squash Bartlett pear soup yesterday. Of course, it's a winter. it's a cooler, more of a cool weather food, but boy, is it delicious.
Oh, good.
I had them, so I wanted to make it. That one's one that came out of one of the Vegetarian Times magazines.
Mm.
It's just one of my favorites, and I did not have, you make it with coconut milk, and I didn't have any. So I had frozen, it calls for light coconut milk, a can of light coconut milk. And I didn't have a can, but I had some frozen regular coconut milk. So I used a cup of soy milk and about 5 cubes of coconut milk, and it turned out.
Mel has arrived.
Is it Mel?
Yes, uh-huh. Hi.
Mel. It's Jeannie. How are you?
Yeah, hi. How are you?
I'm good, good.
Are we the only ones now?
No, we have a few.
Okay.
Let's see you on the phone. How are you doing?
Fine.
Good.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. I
haven't been on the calls.
Yeah.
For a while.
Welcome back.
I'm glad I'm here.
Good. I was just reading through. I started reading. Well, I was telling about a recipe that I butternut squash. Bartlett pear soup. Maybe I'll get that.
Nancy? Has arrived.
All one. Is that butternut squash too?
Butternut squash Bartlett pear soup.
Oh, okay. Is it easy to do?
I'll send that one down. I don't know that I did before.
Yeah, which issue of the magazine was that in? Do you remember?
Say that again?
I said, which issue of the magazine was that in?
You know, it's, let me grab it here real quick. It's just one of my favorites, and the magazine's getting pretty worn out here now. Oh, it's the holiday one. It's November, December 2009. I knew it was winter. Ricky goes, the soups are for winter. Yeah, but I have a butternut squash and some Bartlett pears, so I'm going to make it.
My husband likes soup year-round.
Does he? Yeah. Well, I had some leeks. It has leeks and butternut squash and Bartlett pears and vegetable broth. A can of light coconut milk, and then some fresh thyme.
Hmm.
I didn't have any fresh, so I just used my dried thyme. Still tastes really good.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say leeks is something I've never cooked with. I guess I should experiment and do that.
Well, they're good in the soup. They just add a mild, yummy flavor. I've really enjoyed them.
Is that easy to make, Jeannie?
It is. You do blend it after you cook it. So if you have a blender or a handheld blender. Yeah. It's not, you cook you saute the leeks, and then you add the squash and pears, which you've cut up into little cubes. And then you stir in the vegetable broth and bring it to a boil. Add some salt if you like and simmer it for about 20 minutes until the squash is fork tender, and then you remove it from the heat, stir in the coconut milk, and then you puree it.
That would even,
work. Yeah, I have a handheld immersion blender that I use, but you could pour it into a blender or a food processor, and then put it back to the saucepan and stir in the thyme, and then reheat it if you need to, and season it with salt and pepper.
How much pear does it call for?
It's let me just give you 3 tablespoons of olive oil, which I always cut that in half. 2 medium leeks, and you take the white and tender green parts and finely chop it, 3 cups. And I did not chop it, I just sliced it.
Mm.
Because you're going to blend it up anyway. And then 1 small butternut squash peeled and cut into 1-inch pieces. It says about 2 pounds.
Okay.
3 Bartlett pears, peeled, cored, cut into 1-inch pieces.
I've got some in the freezer. I think those would be a good way to use those up.
Yeah, I would. And then 5 cups of low-sodium vegetable broth and 1 14-ounce can of black coconut milk. Like I said, I didn't have the coconut milk. I usually have it in my pantry, and I didn't. I was like, oh, dear. So I used a cup of soy milk. I had some unsweetened soy milk. And I put in, I had some frozen ice cubes of, in my ice cube trays I had regular coconut milk, so I used about 5 cubes of that, okay, along with the soy milk. And then a teaspoon of chopped fresh thyme, and you can garnish it with pumpkin seeds if you want to. It has a real pretty picture there with pumpkin seeds on it. So you saute the leeks for 10 minutes or until they're soft over a medium-low heat. And then you add in the squash and pears and saute for about 5 minutes before you stir in the vegetable broth. And bring it to a boil, and then you reduce the heat to medium-low and add salt if desired. And simmer it about 20 minutes until the squash is fork tender. And then you remove it from the heat, stir in the coconut milk. Puree, blend it until smooth, and then if you need to reheat it, you can, and or keep until it's warmed throughout, and then season with salt and white pepper if desired, it says. Serve garnished with pumpkin seeds. It's just one of my favorites. And I have this Healing Foods cookbook from Vegetarian Times I picked up somewhere, and it has 25 different foods that are really good for you. And I was reading about onions. They have garlic and onions, of course, and ginger and all those. Let's see if I can find it real quick this morning. Oh, they have green tea on here, too. Let me tell you this about green tea. The world's second most consumed beverage after water. Green tea has vast health-giving potential, thanks to a substance in it called, and it has a long name, epigallocatechin 3-gallate, so EGCG. Studies show that EGCG lessens the risk of cardiovascular disease, stroke, high blood pressure, and certain cancers. It reduces the digestive tract's absorption of cholesterol, lowering LDL cholesterol, and interferes with cancer cell growth rates, decreasing the risk of adult leukemia and the spread of breast cancer cells. EGCG also impedes bone-eroding molecules that cause the joint inflammation of rheumatoid arthritis. I didn't know that. So,
again about the arthritis, it hits with the arthritis, green tea?
Yeah, it helps to impede the bone-eroding molecules that cause the joint inflammation of rheumatoid arthritis.
Does it say how much you should drink a day?
Yeah, down here it says aim to drink 5 cups of green tea steeped for 5 minutes daily.
Wow.
Longer, hotter steeps add bitterness, but up the antioxidants. I always leave if I have a tea bag, I leave the tea bag in my tea while I'm drinking it.
What was the first couple words of that? Is it a?
If you longer, hotter, steeps.
Oh.
Just to steep it for 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Longer, hotter steeps add bitterness, but they up the antioxidants. And then it says grind green tea into spice rubs. Did I answer what you were asking there?
I just was wondering how much they suggested a day. 5 cups is an awful lot of tea a day.
Yeah.
And it stains your teeth.
What I did over the, I have yerba mate, and I think that's a green tea. That's what I can see. But I used my French press and brewed some, and then I iced it for Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely has a taste to it, but I like it a lot. So not many people drink that. So I've been drinking it as an iced tea, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it also says here that you can grind the green tea leaves into spice rubs, infuse it into drinks, or use it as a cooking liquid or marinade.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a fan of its grassy flavor, try a blend with stronger flavors such as pomegranate, or sneak the brew into smoothies. Aha.
After you've made the tea, though, right? Not just using it. You can't kind of put the tea leaves or whatever is in a tea bag edible?
I would probably use the tea. I mean, After it's prepared, yeah.
Okay.
As they, in your smoothies, sauces, and grains.
Mm, that's a good idea.
And they have a green tea with pomegranate juice recipe where you use 7 green tea bags, 3 cups of pomegranate, 1/2 cup of orange juice, some honey, and an orange. I bet that's good.
Can't get pomegranates now, though.
Yeah.
Loretta?
Has arrived.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Good, good. I'm going to read about the onion here. That's what I was heading towards. And red onions provide the most potent defense. But it says, onion's zesty flavor isn't the only thing that makes chopping one worth the tears it elicits. Onions contain ingredients that fight colds and flu. The sulfur compounds that make you cry have potent anti-inflammatory properties that relieve cold and flu-related aches and congestion. And a flavonoid called quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, an even more effective congestion buster in onion, works with vitamin C to stabilize the body's histamine-producing, sniffle-causing response to germs. But most of all, the flavanols that give onions their color were shown in a recent Chinese study to help prevent influenza entirely, boosting immunity to 3 common strains. Really? That's pretty neat. Oh, listen to this. To breathe easier all winter, eat 1/2 onion a day. For the biggest protective punch, make it a red one. Red onions contain more pigment flavanols than yellow varieties. To reduce eye irritation while chopping, wear goggles and use very sharp knives.
Even glasses don't help.
Yeah.
I remember years ago reading, put a match in your mouth, not a lighted one, but, and that will, I don't know, I can't remember if I ever tried it, but I remember hearing that one.
Heard so many things with selling slicers and things, we used to peel 50 pounds a day.
Oh.
We're standing there peeling onions in front of everybody and other. So you get everybody's hints and tips.
You know,
Go ahead.
If you burn a candle while you're peeling an onion close by, it helps tremendously.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
I used to didn't have any problems when I wore contacts.
Really?
Yeah, that's me too. I wear contacts, and then I always tell people peel them outside. The air blows the things away.
I think getting them on your hands, I think it goes into your skin. I think if you could wear a pair of gloves, it would help. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I would think contacts would be worse than glasses.
No, for some reason, they kind of take away the, or affect your eyes, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah, that helps me. It helps me, too, when I wear those. So anyway, just some things I was reading last night in that little, that's the magazine, Healing Food, the cookbook, that came from vegetarians. It's a magazine format. It's on display until March the 15th.
Dr. Oz yesterday, I think it was yesterday's program I watched last night, said about shingles, that we've all, if we've had chickenpox, we have it in our bodies, and a good way to avoid getting them is to keep your immune system strong. He also, at the very end, suggested getting the vaccine, but Mary Liz
has left the conference.
That's, you know, it's the, as with everything, every other disease is out there. And today, he's starting off the program, by the way, of cleaning up our food supply from the mercury that's in all the fish to the pesticides. So it'll be interesting to watch what he says about all this.
Oh, definitely. To try to find him. I still haven't found him yet. I got the last 5 minutes of his program last night. Crazy. Well, I was reading in the Rave. I picked up the Rave Diet and Lifestyle book again to start reading just the beginning parts. And talking about the magic of whole foods and how we can cut out, you know, a lot of the pesticides. He was comparing animal and how much, I'm trying to find it here, is in animal foods. Oh, he's got a list here, a brief summary of the differences between plant foods, animals, and refined foods. So, plant foods have fiber, animal foods have no fiber, refined foods have no fiber. Plant foods are cancer fighters, and animal and refined are not. Plant foods have antioxidants, and animal foods and refined foods have oxidants. Plant foods are low fat, animal foods and refined foods are high fat. Plant foods are low saturated fat, and animal and refined are high saturated fat. Plant foods have no cholesterol, and animal and refined are high. Or animal foods are high cholesterol, and refined foods are high trans fat. Plant foods are low pesticide toxins, animal foods are high pesticide toxins, and refined foods are high sugar. And plant foods, no hormones, and animal foods have high hormones. So,
does that mean that plants have some saturated fat? Maybe the movement.
It says low saturated fat, didn't it? Yeah.
About like avocados with the MUFA.
Right, right. So you're going to have avocado and olives.
Mm-hmm.
Those are saturated, yeah.
Okay.
But they're, and maybe coconut.
Mm.
Maybe. Yeah, some of the oily ones, that's a good point, yeah. And then, it's just a good reminder, these things. You know, I like to go back and read these sometimes.
But yeah, why are we doing what we're doing?
There's, it's been estimated that 70 to 85% of all hospital patients suffer from illnesses associated with diet-induced diseases.
Wow.
This should not come as a surprise. Humans evolved primarily on a diet of whole natural plant foods. Today, whole plant foods constitute only 7% of our diet. 42% of our calories come from animal foods, and a whopping 51% of our calories come from refined foods. And it's interesting, these things. He gave the chapter on diet, disease, and weight loss. This is a quote by a guy. Most people don't let their children smoke, yet they regularly take them to fast food restaurants, and that's just as risky in terms of cancer as if they had bought them a pack of Marlboro cigarettes. B.A. Stoll, S-T-O-L-L. And then a guy from Cornell University, there's only one major disease, and that's malnutrition. All ailments and afflictions to which we may fall heir are directly traceable to this major disease. Interesting. And then he gave this analogy that there's an old Indian legend in which six blind men came across an elephant. Having no idea what an elephant was, they moved in close and started to feel it. One touched its leg and described the elephant as a pillar. Another touched his tail and declared an elephant was a rope. The third touched its ear and said the elephant was like a big fan, and so on. The blind men then began to argue about what an elephant was based on the empirical data they had collected, with each insisting he was correct. The problem, of course, was that none of the blind men could see the entire elephant, only parts of it. Quote C. Many of the problems Americans have with understanding the relationship of diet to disease are analogous to this story. Unfortunately, the inability to see the whole picture is greatly reinforced by so-called, quote, scientific studies because they only look at specific parts of the entire picture. Take alcoholic beverages, for example. Recently, there have been waves of studies purporting that wine is good for the heart. This is because these studies were focusing only on a small part of the wine, the antioxidants.
Has arrived.
What such studies cannot, quote, see is the alcohol in the wine. When you step back and look at the whole wine beverage, including alcohol, it not only harms the heart, but the brain, nervous system, liver, and other organs, and generally devastates the entire body. Instead of saying that wine is good for the heart and ignoring what it does to the rest of the body, these, quote, scientists should have been saying that this study confirms that the antioxidants found in grapes are good for the heart, without endorsing wine as a healthy beverage. Instead, what we have is a bunch of blind scientists stating that wine is a health drink because they're not only, quote, seeing the effects of a specific ingredient on the heart, not what the whole wine package does to the rest of the body. We have known that antioxidants are good for the heart for decades, and we've known that grapes are good for the body for centuries. What such scientific studies are doing is turning bad foods into good foods for the sole reason, for the sole benefit of those who sell bad foods. And then he puts in parentheses, don't get me wrong, if you want to get tipsy or even drunk, there's no better beverage than wine. Just don't be able to have a drink. Of course, the scientific approach fits very nicely into the marketing plans of food industries, and in fact, virtually all of these scientific studies are funded by food industries. These days, if a food is even a tiny bit of good in it, food industries will hire a team of experts from the prestigious university to do a study specifically designed to turn an unhealthy product into a healthy one. They will even put out press releases and unleash their marketing term to milk as much news coverage from the study as possible. The public then reads the news report and thinks, aha, wine is good for me after all, and they run to the nearest liquor store and start drinking like fish. Anyway, he's just making the comparison there, you know, of studies that are pulled out, you know, one particular thing.
And who's conducting them.
And who's conducting them, yeah. The dairy industry, and then he talks about France. After a 60 Minutes show ran a story on the so-called French paradox.
Has left the conference.
That made ridiculous claim that wine was responsible for the deceptively low rate of heart attacks in France. Wine sales increased by a whopping 40%.
Wow.
What was lost in all the hoopla was the fact that the French paradox is a mirage. The French have different methods of classifying deaths, which make it appear that deaths due to heart disease are lower in France than in with other Western nations. When statistical methods are standardized, however, it turns out that the French die of heart disease at rates comparable to other Western nations. And regardless of how you view the statistics, heart disease is France's number one killer, just as it is in other Western nations who eat comparable diets. Anyway, it's interesting to go back and read some of this stuff. Anybody have any questions or comments? Thoughts about anything here?
I think Dr. Oz was saying on one of his calls that grape was better for you than just eating, wine was better for you than just eating grapes because they squeeze the skin and the seeds and everything, which we normally don't eat those, or at least on the grapes that they use for wine, so.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I think sticking to the rule of one cup a day, you know, one glass of wine a day.
Yeah, right. But don't start. If you're not a drinker, don't start because of it.
Yeah, right, right. And stick to the one glass, which.
And it's the red wine, I believe, anyway.
And he said the darker the better. Sorry.
Right. Mhm. Just like with the onion, you know, I always think the darker colors would be better too, with the antioxidants.
Yeah, that's what that you were reading, so.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the point when he talks about the dairy industry, you know, making, pulling calcium out and thinking it, you know. Milk does the body good, that whole thing there, too. But anyway.
Well, talking of onions, this is Vidalia seeds, and they are really sweet.
Where was you reading that from?
This is from the Rave Diet and Lifestyle book.
Uh-huh.
By Mike Anderson, the one that eating DVD came from.
Right. What page is that on?
It's on page, it's early. Page 8.
Page 8.
7 and 8. It's the chapter that says diet, disease, and weight loss.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it's just, you know. And then he has a section called The Magic of Whole Plant Foods and how your body can pick and choose when it has the whole foods.
That's a different book from the China study?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But they kind of mesh together a little bit. This is a book by Mike Anderson is his name.
Okay.
That book has a wonderful video on eating.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one I watched and decided I would never eat meat again.
Well, that's the one that turned us to.
Really?
I had started when I read the China study, but then Ricky, my husband, watched the eating DVD and said, oh my goodness. And I haven't watched that in a while. I can't find it. I think I gave mine away. I had 2 or 3 copies and it must have been.
Let me think you want to start eating meat again. Just watch that video.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's pretty interesting.
I gave it to my 2 sisters. They wouldn't even watch it. They want to know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, that's horrible.
Ignorance is bliss.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to give
it. The one on chickens. I don't know if the one on chickens is on that one or not. But
chickens are no better.
Can't look at an egg without thinking about those chickens.
Mm-hmm. So, Mel, have you read this?
Yeah. I said I was going to give it to my friend, and she said, oh, no, I don't want to know what's in the hot dog, because I love hot dogs.
Oh, of all things.
Oh, my God.
That's a little
thing. Say, well, here, just read about whole foods, then. That won't include your hot dog. I mean, as far as the reading part about it. Anyway, that's interesting.
That's funny.
There's a thing here, how good are whole foods? We're just at the beginning of our understanding. Here's an illustration. In the 70s, there was a study conducted in which animals were fed 2% of their diet from red dye, sodium cyclamate, or an emulsifier. The animals that were fed one additive showed no harmful effects at all. The animals that were fed 2 of the additives showed balding fur, diarrhea, and retarded weight gain. But the animals that were fed all 3 additives were dead within 2 weeks.
Whoa.
And so he's talking about the accumulative, the toxicity is amplified as you get more and more in there. And it says, in a similar fashion, it was recently reported that Parkinson's disease has been linked to the exposure of not one, but a combination of pesticides, namely paraquat, and organophosphate. What this illustrates is that toxins, when taken together, amplify their toxicity in a synergistic and logarithmic fashion. In a similar but beneficial way, nutrients work together in the same way, like calcium and magnesium, vitamin E with selenium, protein with B6, and so forth. There's also thousands of antioxidants that work together in a synergistic fashion that multiplies and enhances their health-enhancing effects. A tomato, for example, contains over 10,000 different phytochemicals. Possible combinations and permutations of nutrients once inside the body are simply mind-boggling. And at this point, we have only a childlike understanding of how these nutrients work together in thousands of combinations. There's been a number of studies that show when a single chemo-preventative nutrient is fed to animals, it had no effect on the incidence of cancer. But when 2 or more nutrients were combined, the cancer growth was sharply cut.
That's why they do the